pitched to the Center Circle studio. Tim Van Horn goes studs up into the soccer world where no one is safe. The 18-yard box is wall-free. This is My Three Subs Podcast, a soccer odyssey with your manager, Tim Van Horn.
Exciting soccer is back. We've got Champions League action, Premier League, and more. It's as close to normal as you're going to get for now.
Well, and you also got the finals. Yes, finals.
Conference finals of the USL Championship. We'll preview that. MLS action going on and in the MLS. Nashville still looking very respectable and in the playoff hunt. And then also, we've got a great guest today. Bo Melson, the first African-American player to come out of Memphis and play professional soccer.
What a story.
We've got Bo's story coming up next. You don't know Bo until you know Bo Melson. That, and I've got one final question for Kyle Morton.
Interesting.
That's coming up in added time. I'm with Brody Scott. We're in the tunnel. We've got shin guards on. We're spaced out. No, not that way. We're physically distanced.
I'm spaced
out. This is My Three Subs.
We'll be back with today's kickoff from the Center Circle Studios. This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
Safe, sanitized, scary as hell.
The Haunted Web, the largest, most disturbing haunt in Memphis. The Haunted Web, at the corner of Perkins Road and I-240, is three horrific haunted attractions in one safe and sanitized all-indoors location. Dare to venture into the swamp to face a century-old curse in the all-new Voodoo Village. Madness is the cure in the Slot Sanitarium. And if you're still not broken, enter the depths of Webb Falls Penitentiary to experience solitary confinement. The Haunted Web at the corner of Perkins Road and I-240. Voted number one in Memphis, number one in Tennessee, and one of the top haunts in America. Get tickets now at hauntedweb.com. Safe, sanitized, scary as hell. Hauntedweb.com. Mask required. Now open.
A soccer odyssey. We're underway from the Center Circle Studios.
The soccer landscape in the Memphis area is rich. We've had some big names on here. We've had, of course, Tony Carbignani. We've had Ross Pauley, Johnny Walker, and the list continues to go on. And one person we haven't had a chance to talk to is not maybe necessarily that first, second, or third name that's on that list of professionals.
But it should be.
It should be because he has a very prominent place in Memphis soccer history. Not necessarily for the longevity, but essentially for the timing and for some of the barriers that he broke from Memphis professional athletes. Bo Melson joins us today. Yes, Bo! Yeah. How you doing?
All right. How you doing, Tim? How you doing?
Doing very well. Brody and I are very excited to have you on. Of course, people who remember the Memphis Americans indoor soccer team will remember you for your time there. And of course, who can forget the Kalamazoo Kangaroos, right?
The Kalamazoo Kangaroos. Who ever thought I'd be living in Michigan back in the day playing for a team called Kalamazoo? I never knew we had a Kalamazoo.
The rumor was at one time that Elvis had snuck away there after his death, that he was in Kalamazoo. But you know, we can revisit that later. But what Brody and I would really love to do is to take this time and just get to know you and let our listeners get to know Bo Melson. And you are a Memphis guy growing up. I know you played soccer here in high school and in college and professionally. But tell us a little bit about growing up. You know, where you grew up and where you first saw and fell in love with the game.
Oh, okay. Well, that should be kind of easy there if we can go about maybe 25, 30 years, maybe almost 40 years ago. My soccer journey started in Atlanta, Georgia. That's where I was originally born and raised, in the city of Atlanta. And I guess back in the day, I had very good, strong rooting as far as my parents. I had a country dad that was kind of born there in Cowee County, which is in the country of Georgia, back in the backwoods. And I had an inner city mother that he found and married, and he brought her to the city. of Atlanta.
Wow.
And City girl. I think when they reunited there, they decided they want to conceive and have a child. And of course, I was the first one. Are we
getting into Deuteronomy here, where they begat Bo Melson, and then Bo Melson begat, and then there were some more begatting?
It was two more after that, okay. But okay. You know, it was only three. I didn't come from a large family. I came from just three siblings, and of course, like I said, I was the firstborn. And as I was growing up, you know, I think I weighed about maybe 8 pounds. I do remember 8 pounds and like 24 ounces. And I was a morning baby. So I always wanted to be on the block early, I guess, back in the day.
Right.
So being on the block early in the days, we grew up in inner city, of course. And the next door neighbors, of course, were playing soccer in the backyard. Mm-hmm. And I had strict parents, like, wouldn't let me go too far, you know, out of the community there. But
sure.
I had a nice backyard where I could just go out and throw my football and you know, play basketball. But I didn't have a soccer ball. So, of course, you know, I stayed in like a predominant white area. And the kids were, you know, white playing soccer. And I'm like, hey, I'm black over here playing football and baseball. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I want one of those soccer balls. Let me try one of those.
Yeah.
So I went in the house and I said, Mom, I said, the kids are over there playing with a different ball. It's like a black and white soccer ball. And I want it. So Mom said, well, I guess I'll go and get you one when I get back out. And I said, well, they invite me to come over and kick ball with them. Mm-hmm. And I want to go over there and play with them. So if I do remember, my mom was in the backyard and my neighbor came out and she said, would you like to come over to play with the kids? And I'm like, sure, I want to play with that soccer ball. So I went over there and touched that ball and started kicking it around with the kids next door. I'll never forget it. The guy's name was Billy. And he said, man, you're good. And I'm like, yeah, you're good too. He said, well, I tell you what, we got a soccer game coming up Saturday. Would you like to come and play with us? And I'm like, yeah, let me ask my mom. So I went back in and asked my mom. I'm like, Mom, they got a soccer game coming up this past weekend. I mean, next weekend. Can I go over? I mean, go and play with them? Mm-hmm. She said, well, let me talk with the parents. And they went to talk with my mom, went to talk with the mother. And next thing you know, we were carpooling, going to the soccer field. And I never forget it. It was back in like 1975. It was a league called DISA, which was called the DeKalb Youth Soccer Association. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was huge. I went out there and, of course, you know, I'm like, wow, I don't see any black people out here. You know, what's going on here? But it was an experience that I never forget. It was a dream that come true for me. And once I touched that soccer ball with those kids and got on the soccer field, I didn't have any skills at the time, but I had super, super, super speed. So they would just kick the ball and I just go chase it. like you throw a ball to a dog and the dog go bring it back. But they said, no, don't bring it back. Go put it in the goal.
Yeah, shoot it. Shoot it.
Whatever you do, just don't pick it up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I didn't pick it up with my hands. I was able to use my feet and maneuver it. And I remember I scored my first goal. And I mean, the fans and the parents went like berserk. Like, who is this kid? Right. Where did he come from? How fast he was? And I never put down that soccer ball from then. And I took it from there. And next thing you know,
I
fell in love with the game.
Yeah, you're hitting the ground running.
I fell in love.
Back then in the mid-70s, were the Atlanta Chiefs there in Atlanta at the time?
Yeah, we had a team there by the Atlanta Chiefs, which kind of came in the area after I left the city and moved to Memphis. Mm-hmm. Then they brought a team called Atlanta Chiefs that was very, very pretty good back in the day because they were kind of like in our division back in the day. Well, when I came to Memphis and started playing club soccer here, I was able to get introduced a little bit to the NSL, which was the North American Soccer League, and I was like 16 years old I finally caught up with that. And,
hey, Bo, tell me about moving to Memphis, because you talked about how big that league in DeKalb was. What was it like moving in the 70s to Memphis, Tennessee, where maybe they didn't play this commie sport here?
Well, you're right, Tim. They did not, and that was kind of one of the most, a disappointed moment I had when my dad he was a professional truck driver. He drove for a company called Roadway Express.
It
used to be like on the, I think, is that South Memphis area down near Neely Road? You go down Winchester all the way down to Neely Road. It was a big company called Roadway Express. Well, my dad drove for that company, and he got a offer to move anywhere in the world when he transferred out of Atlanta to go to any city he wanted to go to, but he chose Memphis.
All right.
That's what brought his family to Memphis, Tennessee.
Was there a little bit of a question, like, did mom sit there and go, okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, like, she taking me away from the inner city in Atlanta where I was enjoying my growing up, playing what I loved doing with soccer. Got to Memphis, and my dad didn't do no research. When we first got here, and I was trying to do my history. I was trying to do my history when we first moved to this city. We didn't have soccer.
Right, yeah.
They didn't have soccer here. Well, I mean, it did come up a little bit, I think, when we were trying to chase it down. And I did my research, and I think the mayor back then was like Mayor Chandler.
Wyeth Chandler, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, when we first moved to this city. And I told my dad, I cried. I said, Dad, you got to take me back to Atlanta. He said, why? I said, because I love this soccer, and they don't have soccer here. I didn't even see a soccer field.
Yeah.
And he said, well, son, my job is here is making a lot more money. I think, you know, I can raise my family here pretty good, which we grew up in Germantown, because when we first moved here, he moved us to the suburbs, which was East Memphis back in the day, because, you know, off of Germantown Road. So I'm like, well, Dad, I love the area. I love suburb area. He got us into a great high school, which I went to Germantown High School, which they had every prep sports there, from golf, baseball, football, volleyball, swim team, golf. They didn't have a soccer team.
Everything.
Take me back.
You could have been the first black equestrian.
right. I mean, picking up garbage or anything, but make a long story short, I still had the ability to play, you know, sports. Just, when I was born, I just had that gift of talent to do any sports I wanted to do, which I did end up playing football and basketball for Germantown, which I started every team. I mean, you know, from my middle school to my high school, I started on the basketball football team, but I wanted soccer.
Right.
I didn't want no time off in any area of my life at the time, because I knew I had a gifted thing in me, and soccer was one of them, but I used my gift to play football and basketball to get me to the next level. To make another long story short, my dad ended up going down to the city hall and talked to the mayor. And next thing I know, we see soccer field start coming up.
Oh, funny how that worked out, huh?
Yeah, you know, we did. I mean, I do remember that, but it might be more history that was on top of me before I got here to make soccer grow. But to get to the level that I wanted to get to, I remember my dad going down to the city hall, making sure that we had a soccer league going, which started, if you guys remember, it was called the Greater Memphis Soccer Association.
Yes, GMSA. And the youngsters played in SEMSA, yeah. SEMSA. Yeah,
SEMSA.
Yeah, those are the only two leagues that I can remember when I came from Atlanta to Memphis and got on my first youth soccer team here in Memphis. And once I got on those teams, I got with some of the best coaches that was in the youth league back then. And finally, it was getting a little too, like, that wasn't my level, because I was still, like, had the talent to be better than most of the kids there. I just wanted to upgrade. So I found a youth soccer team, which was called the Memphis kickers.
Yes.
Which I played with the Mustangs because it was two club leagues back then that were very talented. I mean, had multi-athletes. I mean, the best in Tennessee that I ever seen, especially in Memphis. Mm-hmm. And one of the cats were named Steve Bradshaw.
Steve, who went to MUS, right?
Yes, yes. And he was one of the guys that came out of Memphis, also played professional here in Memphis with the Memphis Rogues. And, of course, he had a tremendous career.
Who were your influences here locally? Which coaches, you know, were helping you along and help grow your game?
Well, I'm gonna be honest with you. I should have been a black German. I should have been a German. I should have grew up in Germany somewhere, yeah. Because when I was in Atlanta, I had a soccer coach named Mr. Sargent. He was a Germany. I mean, he was from Germany.
From Germany, yeah.
And actually, he was in the military, but he got his citizens over in the USA. He was my first soccer coach in Atlanta. And then when I left from Atlanta to get back to Memphis and started my soccer here, I met a coach by the name of Sepp Hubert. Please rest in peace, yeah. Sepp Hubert. Yeah, he took that club to the next level to put Memphis soccer. I mean, it's history now. That's right. The reason why we have so many talent soccer here in Memphis now, because Sepp put soccer on the map for all of us.
Godfather.
He was the godfather of soccer. But that was my best influence, was Sepp Hubert. And he took me up under his wing. He was like my second drill sergeant dad. And, he made me be who I am today, you know, as far as
a scoring machine.
The man, I mean, he was a soccer godfather, and I appreciate Seth. What rest in peace, Seth, because he passed away, I think, about 2 years ago. I think.
Yep.
And but he did teach me a lot to utilize my skills that I was, you know, I had to learn to you know, master the game of soccer a little bit. And when I got the speed and got the skills, I was pretty much untouchable a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And that was good growing up the way I grew up and, you know, compared to what's going on today in soccer today. But back then, you know, man, I thank God for Seth.
Bo, yeah. I got to ask you about Bo Melson joining us. He played professional indoor soccer, played club and high school ball here, college ball too. Bo, I have to ask you, during that time where you're playing and you've got speed and you're showing talent, before we get to how you got to the next level, do you still have scars from where my brother used to kick you in the shin and ankles when he marked you?
I mean, I have a split shin from your brother. I mean, I suffer those wounds today. Yes.
That's a mark of a true defenseman. If you can't beat them, just kick the mess out of their shin and hobble them a little bit.
And believe it or not, I was one of the only players can get away without wearing shin guards because I thought I had the toughest shin, or I thought nobody was able to touch me to get to my shins. But Mr. Van Horn was one of the guys that split my shin. I never forget it. And I still have the wound into my shin bone today.
I always wondered why the Thanksgiving get-togethers at my brother's house when you'd come over were just maybe slightly awkward. I guess that dates back to the late 70s and early 80s. But obviously with club ball and you were coming of age and you've had good mentors, at some point in the back of your mind you're probably thinking, okay, I can go next level at this. At what point did you think, okay, I can go to the next level and let's talk about making that next step up to college and beyond?
Well, before I even got to the college level, I'm gonna be honest with you. My club team, playing with the Memphis, the Mustangs, and the Memphis Kickers, and the competitive kids that were playing back in those days, got me to the next level that I knew I had to step my game up even more to get to the college level, because I knew I was onto something. I'm like, okay, I can play this game, and I think I can have a dream. I had a dream. I want to play professionally.
Right.
So I went back and did more research and start really study soccer and get a little bit more educated on it. Start finding some of the world-class players like Pele and start trying to see how if I can get to their level or can I get to their camps or whatever I had to do at that time to be a better player. I did those resources. But Sepp, like I said, my coach Sepp took me up on his wings, and he trained me a little bit more harder than probably any other coach I ever had in my life to get me to the next level.
Was that his driving factor, though? Was he like, listen, if you want to get to the next level, if you're serious about this, you're going to do X, Y, Z? Or was he more like, you know what, Bo, you're pretty good at this. Try this, and let's see where it goes from there.
No, he took me up on his wing. Like, he knew I can get to the next level. And he trained at me a lot harder. I mean, he drilled me through skills. And I mean, from the techniques to the tactics. And I mean, he did the whole nine yards for me. I mean, day in and day out, to where we had a tryout for a U.S. Olympic, well, to try to get to the national level.
Okay.
And he chose me. He chose me out of all the kids in the state of, well, in Memphis, and then out of state, we had to go and compete for the state of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose me to go in for that tryout. Wow. And he said, Bo, I think you're ready. And I said, Sepp, you think you sure? He said, you're ready. Wow. So it was a group of us. It was like myself, Steve Bradshaw, another name probably pop up named Didier Ara. He was another top player out of Memphis. Mm-hmm. So we had to go through a state trial. So it was like out of a trial, we were selected out of Memphis to go and try it for the state of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And out of three of us out of Memphis, homegrown Memphis boys, which I make myself homegrown because I moved here back in, like I say, in the 70s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we trained together. We knew we were going to make that national team. Steve Bradshaw, myself, and Didier. And we represented Memphis, Tennessee. And we represented the Mustangs and the Memphis and the Kickers. So we went to the tryout, and we three both made it.
Wow.
we got to the national level and made the national team, where we were chosen to travel out of Memphis. Mm-hmm. The goal was Olympics train at to try to make the Olympic soccer team.
Wow.
And I mean, this was out of they had like four regions. You had the West, the East, the North, and the South.
Yeah.
And we represented the South. So we were able to travel over to the Olympics Air Force Base in Colorado Springs.
Right.
And we stayed there for like 8 weeks. Oh, wow. My God. I mean, and it was like,
Is this for the U-17s or is this U-16s? Where were you?
Oh yeah, I was actually 16 years old.
Wow,
I was 16, under 17. Yeah, under 17.
What was that conversation like with your parents? Where you're like, okay, so remember that whole soccer conversation we had, and I was really upset that wasn't a thing here. Well, it's a good thing I was, because now I'm traveling to go, I don't know, potentially to the Olympics. Surprise.
Exactly. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So at this time, I'm thinking like, well, God, thank you for, my parents moved me to Memphis,
right,
and get me involved to the next level, because the mission started here in Memphis for me. I mean, my soccer career, I made a name for myself, and it was awesome. It was a great feeling, from a black kid coming up out of Atlanta to moving to Memphis, Tennessee, to the next level where you're national known in the soccer world. And I took it to the next level, to where we went and competed, and we fought it hard that I didn't get selected for the Olympic soccer team, but we made it to the level, the competition we had from the East, South, and West, that we did get a silver medal out of that bunch.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Wow. Yeah, I got a 79 real live Olympic medal that I still hang up at my parents' house right today.
Oh, that's amazing.
I still have that award to show from my from my days of soccer.
I mean, that's incredible. I want to ask you about coming to Memphis. I mean, here you are where soccer is more prevalent in Atlanta. You come to Memphis where you're basically a unicorn if you're playing soccer because there's so few programs that are actually doing it. But then to be a man of color that's playing soccer, how many other African Americans were playing? And, you know, how this is your story. How were you treated by your teammates? How were you treated by others? Were you looked upon differently? What were your perceptions when you were playing at this time, which you had some extraordinary things going on in your life regarding skill and the opportunities and the privileges that you got? The privileges that you earned, not that you got. I mean, obviously, you earned. But, I mean, what's your story? You know, how were you feeling then and how were you treated?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I never saw any mistreatment back in those days, even though it was going on, whatever the treatments were before as me being of color, but I wasn't never exposed that way. I was never raised that way. So I guess the uniqueness was that, damn, I want to be like Bo. That's how my teammates looked at me, because I was out to be better than my next opponent, or I training hard. So they never looked at me differently. They just looked at me as an athlete trying to get through, and everybody was just trying to make a name for themselves. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So, and they treated me, man, I mean, like a brother. I mean, like, you know, Tim, you got me, you know, like expressing my history and stuff like that. But I was so different, where I never got called out my name. I might have got spit on a couple of times or tripped or whatever, but I was never racially called up out of my name. Mm-hmm. They respected me as a man. I respect them as teammate. We trained real hard to go beat our opponents.
Yeah.
And that's how we looked at things.
Yeah.
Now, it might have been a different level when we got to our opponents, but if they called me out my name with my teammates that I had, oh, they're going to get them.
Right.
They're going to take care of the biz.
Right.
And, you know, they took care of me like that. And I appreciate the raising that I grew up under, even though it could have been the way they were raised, but they never showed it, or anybody never showed it to me.
Yeah.
Even on traveling trips, you know, which I grew up more on rock and roll type stuff, or, you know, or whatever it took. But it was all a teammate. We, you know, I play with different nationalities, so it wasn't like color. We all in the same ship. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but it was awesome, and I wish that would come back today a little bit, because somehow, you know, it just went left and right, but we have
lost our way a little bit. That's true. I mean, we've lost our way just a little bit on some of that stuff, and we've lost the fact that soccer should be a family, because it is a different sport. We are the minority of players in this country. We should all look after each other's backs. That's the only way we can ever grow the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even with the team moms. I mean, I can remember my team mothers, and you know. Even though my mom might have been the only black team mother, but she was a team mother.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the other team mothers, I mean, they treated me like I was one of theirs.
Right.
Everybody and my mother orange. Treated their kids like they were one of hers. So, I mean, it was a great learning experience for me that I can see through a lot of things now, even though it's here or whatever. But I never looked at it that way. I never, you know, even going to an old dominant white school, Germantown.
Yeah.
They still treated me. I mean, I won best all around at Germantown High School. Come on, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And I was respected. I mean, we respected one another. I mean, I mean, that's how I grew up and was raised. And, well, I mean, it was awesome. I'm just going to say it like that. And I still could say it today for me in my life. It's still awesome. But, you know, I'm trying to teach the other how awesome life can be. Right. You know?
So you got some college offers.
Yeah. I mean, I had major college offers back in my day. I could have went to any major college I wanted to go to. But I chose to stay here. Simple fact, I knew Memphis was bringing a pro soccer team to the area, and I knew I had a great chance of chasing my dream.
So and that was the main factor then of choosing to be a Tiger is that sitting here going, well, listen, that door is going to be wide open. It's going to be a garage door open.
It's a 4-year audition.
Yeah. And you're looking at maybe a coach sitting there going, well, listen, let's just cherry pick from the local college here. I got you, Bo. No, I mean, yeah, that's smart.
Well, let me say this point. I did my history and I cannot find no history of my history college career.
I can, you know what? I will find one of the media guides. I believe your name is plastered in the record books in there, Bo.
I mean, I need to be down there now knocking on doors. Hey, y'all remember back in the day? I mean, I was there with Danny Kirk, Larry Finch.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, I stayed on the dorm with Bobby Parr, Andre Turner, Keith Lee, and hey, you guys, what happened to the soccer back in the day when we were there? We wasn't that bad now. We started a new era there, and I can't find no history of it.
You know, I could see Dana Kirk if he were alive today, and I knew Dana to an extent, and I know he had a couple of problems there at the university, but all in all, you know, a decent cat. But I could see him going, I don't know anything about no soccer kicking a ball around. I say yes to basketball. I say no to this soccer ball sport.
Exactly. But I can tell you one thing. I did have Keith Lee and Andre Turner did come and acknowledge one of our soccer games there at the campus. Yeah. I bet you if I can find one of them, Doom Haynes, all these guys, they remember Bo Melson back in the day.
All I'm going to say is, where's Melson Hall
around
now?
The campus? Yeah.
You know, where's Melson Hall now? That's what we need to find out. The Melson.
The soccer team dining room should be the Melson Hall.
Exactly.
Melson Hall.
You know, I was in that dining room, trust me. And I would like to know the knowledge of, I don't even see my coach, Peter Bramell, that made me. Actually, him and Seth got me to Memphis State because Seth wanted me to go to Rose College to play for him.
Yeah.
You know what? Here's what we're gonna do, Bo. We're gonna reach out to our friend Richard Mulrooney, and we're gonna find a media guide. I'll get a copy of the media guide because I know your name is plastered all in there. I've seen it before. We'll get you a copy of that,
and then we'll start throwing some elbows about where Melson Hall should be located.
You know, and if
they don't even have the first goal I scored at Memphis University of Memphis Soccer, and I know I scored plenty of goals at Memphis State.
Yeah.
A big university school.
Right.
And I don't have not one day that I stepped on a soccer field and scored a goal.
You know, Bo, at the community college where I played baseball, they've at least got one of the spots on the bench with my name on a plaque. Because that's where I spent my ass most of the time.
but if I could find out those documentation, be awesome for just to close the doors out in Memphis that I did have a career at Memphis State. It was brief because I wanted to go on and play professional soccer.
Yeah.
And when Cal Roach gave me the opportunity, everybody knows Cal Roach, the legend of soccer. And I never forget that he came and spoke with my mom and my dad and said, hey, you guys got something here.
What was that like to have him in your house?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it was awesome. Here come the king of soccer coming into my home. And he has his briefcase, and he's like, I want him. And
at that point, were your parents like, okay, this is for real now? Like, it's not a game.
Yeah, and that's when I said, this is for real. I mean, I watched this guy on ABC Sports beat out Lynn Swan, O.J. Simpson, all these guys, all these mega athletes. Cal Roach Jr. beat these guys out, man.
Right.
And I wanted that challenge. Like, this guy came to my house, and now he's saying I can be as it's greater than them.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, let's run this. But I had a short career, to make a long story short, because soccer kind of banded again in Memphis on me. And maybe, you know, I don't say that was a turning point in my life, but I had a lot of exposure. I had a dream. I chased it as long as I could. All the way till I went to Kalamazoo, still chasing it.
And you bagged a few goals and got some assists up in Kalamazoo. I know you were kind of getting your feet wet in the MISL here and didn't necessarily hit the score sheet. But in Kalamazoo, you scored like 6-7 goals that season, didn't you? Your first full season.
Yeah. And I give a shout-out to Chris Bartell. Chris Bartell was one of my a coach is there in Kalamazoo. Actually, he's the one, the reason why I made it to Kalamazoo, because he wanted me to come on board. And it was a lot of great talent players up there. But, you know, if I felt like if, you know, the opportunity was there again, I would still take it the same way I took it now. And if they would have gave me the opportunity to get in there to say bo, I would have probably one of the top world class players in the history of soccer right now. But I appreciate the opportunity, because my dream was I wanted to play professional, and I did. So
yeah, and I know as the first black man to do that out of the city of Memphis, there have been others since you. I don't know the countless others in between, but I also know that a friend of our show and he's been a guest, Jarvis Greer's son, JJ Greer, JJ, of course, grew up here and on. You know, not only played at Memphis, but played several seasons in the USL at a very high level as well. So you know, there have been others that have come after you.
You had to pay for the path there, Bo.
Yeah, man, I really appreciate that, Tim, and I appreciate the honor you having me to talk about that, because it was a pass for me, and it was a great pass. And Bo is still here. I still have a dream. You know, I'm still chasing after. I'm going to be one of the, maybe we might win a medal one day, but Bo Melzi might have to be the coach. I want to be one of the elite broadcasters one day. And still, I'm still got the voice.
Yeah,
that I might be on the top of the list somewhere down the road for the World Cup game. I don't know, but I still have that dream. Even though the era has turned in soccer, I mean, way before my time, and I appreciate the way it turned, because it gave an outlet for a lot of other black athletes like myself, and they're doing real well.
And I want to send a tip of the cap to Memphis 901 FC, because this season you were one of their guests to smash a guitar. Now, Bo Jackson might know a little bit about music. He might know a little bit about soccer, football, and basketball, but that Bo don't know smashing guitars. This Bo does.
No, not in Memphis, Tennessee, no. And that's a dream. I thank everybody that was involved, Tim. I thank you for getting me to that event. And, you know, that's a chapter I can put behind the scene of soccer. And it was real nice. It was something special. My wife enjoyed it. I had my brother in town that particular day. He enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I saw he was holding the camera. He ducked when you smashed, because I think he's afraid of splinters.
Well, I was just about to ask, Bo, did you have to pack the bottom of it with the gunpowder for it to explode like that? I mean, really, you hit the mess out of that thing, and it exploded. There's got to be a video somewhere.
You were lifting. You were weightlifting the 3 days before that, weren't you? Don't lie.
I tell you what, it was social distance. How about that?
That guitar got socially distanced, is what happened.
Yeah, we had social distance going on. So, but it was national live on television, and then of course it was postponed because it rained. So a lot of my elite friends kind of missed it, because we couldn't get it on television enough to see it, because they postponed it because of the rain.
You hit the thing so damn hard, Bo. You made it rain.
You broke the sky.
Oh yeah. I would love to do that again. But it was a great experience. It was just great to be in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Like I say, I've been in a lot of atmospheres throughout my time and days of, you know, growing up. Been to a lot of cities that, you know, I was fortunate enough to get to and travel. Even with my club soccer team, I mean, we went overseas and stayed in Germany for about, like, I don't know, maybe 8 weeks or so. And we stayed with, you know, like inner parents over there that took care of us, and that was a great experience for me back in the day. And club, you know, of course, I traveled all over playing soccer with all the teams we had in the league. So,
who you like now, by the way? I'm just curious. Who are you following now? Any teams or players your favorite?
Well, I mean, I have some favorites still. I'm always going to be, I guess, a Brazilian. I mean, I love the Brazilian teams. And but as far as top players, I think the era is so big now. I mean, it's so many great players and players of study coming up. Mm-hmm. I haven't still got my elite player yet. I'm still waiting until I can maybe become his agent.
Right.
Or I'm not going to put his name out there. I got to find me a good top player where I can coach him or be his agent. Then I'll put it out there.
I like that.
Give me a piece of the pie.
I like that. Yeah, well, I like that.
You know, I know your abs are very much built like Cristiano Ronaldo, so I thought maybe you would lean that way. But, you know, maybe with the Brazilian, maybe you're more of a Neymar, you know, fan or somebody.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, something like that.
David Luiz.
We're going to keep that name on a down low until I get into broadcasting, then I'm going to bring my elite player up.
There you go. There you go. Hey, Bo, it's been great to talk with you.
Thank you.
Man, thank you for sharing your story. And, you know, I've been telling Brody how excited that I've been that you're coming on board here. So I know you're in town. So let's grab some lunch soon and let's talk a little
That'd
more soccer.
Great.
And don't be a stranger. You know, maybe we could use a fill in from time to time and use some of your wisdom and some of your experience. And please don't be a stranger. We'd love to have you back.
Well, I'll definitely be there, Tim, any day, any time, man. You just tell me, and I'm there, Tim. No problem at all, and I appreciate you again. And like I say, social distance. Be safe out there, man, because we're in another era of life right now.
Well, you know, my brother and I, we both mark the same way. We're slow enough that we don't have to socially distance. Everybody else is just that much faster.
Faster, yeah. Dust.
Yeah, well, that's good. And I can say, y'all.
He ain't going to say anything bad about my brother, man.
No.
His kind word, Bo.
Yeah, I'm not gonna comment on that.
Hangs up the phone, Dad Van.
You tell your brother, we still got business to handle when you talk with him.
We'll get him down here to one of these we'll get him in here into one of these indoor places one day, and we'll.
We're gonna wrestle with the soccer ball this time.
See, that's it. See, he may want to do a home and home series. One match on the soccer pitch and one match in the wrestling ring. So be careful what you wish for now. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, all right. I mean, set it up, man. Let's set it up.
Oh, it's good. Let's go.
All right, Bo. Hey, thanks so much, my friend.
Thank you so much, man. Y'all have a great one.
Takes us to the half. More next on My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
Hey, it's Tim. Just reminding you, this podcast is now powered by Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters. Brody and I want all of our time going into making the podcast as entertaining and as interesting as possible for you. So that's why we ditched our old services, made the switch over to Podcave. This is the complete podcast management, combining all the tools we need to make the best shows we can, to make them available on all the platforms you use, and to always stay connected with you. Podcave provides unlimited audio storage, so all our episodes, new and the old ones, are always available whenever you want them. And our website, it's included and built into Podcave, so you always have a place to find us. It's that easy. Music and soundscapes we use on the show are professionally made and fully licensed by Podcave. We get email and text management tools to stay in touch with you, guest booking tools, episode planning tools. Podcave even includes customizable news feeds so that we can stay on top of the latest headlines with Podcave. It's all in one place, and it's all inclusive for just $49 a month. That's right, $49 a month. Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters. Save time and money with your first or next podcast. Don't be afraid. Give it a try. Use Podcave. That's podcave.com. That's P-O-D-C-A-V-E, podcave.com.
There's the whistle. Second half, My Three Subs action from the Center Circle Studios.
It's an exciting time in soccer again, dude.
It's a good day to be alive.
Yeah, as we record this, Champions League is going, and they've got a full slate of matches now.
Yeah,
which is good.
Yeah, I'm not mad. You got if we were to list them all, we'd just be here all morning. But yeah, full slate of matches today, and then of course this weekend with Champions League, Premier League, everybody's playing today. It's just an all-in kind of ding. So across the board,
it's a sense of normalcy. Although I know the crowds really aren't.
Yeah, well, and speaking of that, you know the Shield will not be given out this year in the MLS.
Oh, the Supporters Shield for best overall point total or record?
Not be handed out for 2020.
Why?
I guess because of the shortened season? I don't know, to answer your question, but I just know that it will not be handed out this year.
That seems a bit odd.
Yeah.
I mean, do they at least get some coupons for
Chick-fil-A?
You know, I think there's a CONCACAF Champions League spot that you still get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no Shield. You don't get the hardware.
I guess no supporters, no shield.
I guess. I don't know how that works. I don't make the rules, Tim.
That's kind of odd. Before we get to the USL Championship, I did want to touch on the Premier League just for a couple of minutes. And Virgil van Dijk is going to be for a few months because of an ACL that was damaged in a collision in the Everton game.
Yeah.
By the goalkeeper, Jordan Pickford.
Surgery, the whole nine yards. He's out for at least a couple months. And while the surgery was successful, we know that, it's the rehab for that that's just going to take a long time.
Yeah, and he's already pledged that he's going to do everything he can to get back and be back to his form.
Oh, sure.
A point of contention in the match was that collision. Jordan mm-hmm. Pickford coming in and basically just almost, I don't know, stabbing him.
Obliterating?
Just obliterating his leg
on
the play. But taking a look at the play again, and there were calls for that he should have been sent off for that, for the injury. They say, it should have been VAR. He should have been run out of there. But looking at the play again, it was a tweener play.
It was bang, bang.
And the reason I say that is if you watch the replay back, Pickford has got his eyes on the ball that's coming over the top. He's got his eyes on the ball. He has no idea Van Dijk's even there until the last second, and that's when he has his oh my God moment.
Yeah, we're about to run into each other. We're playing chicken, and nobody's watching the street.
Right. And it doesn't look like he timed it well. He did... It's basically called like a star jump, almost like what Peter Schmeichel did mm-hmm. when he spreads his arms and legs out to make himself as big as he could. But he did it like in the air rather than staying on the ground.
Right.
And he didn't have much balance. And then his next move was basically taking out Van Dijk.
Right.
And again, I don't think there's malice. I think there's mutual respect there. I don't think that was what he was looking to do at all. It looked awful, but a lot of it just stemmed from the fact that Virgil van Dijk made that run and he could not be picked up by Jordan Pickford's line of sight until Pickford looked down. Is like,
oh, there you are.
It's too late at that point.
Yeah,
because Pickford at that point he's got his eyes on it. It's like, okay, I'm making a run toward this. I've got to come get this.
Right.
Because I can. And then it's like, where did he come from?
Right.
And then bang, bang, and
off he goes.
Yeah. So that's horrible news. Liverpool does not have. You're not going to replace Van Dijk like for like right now. Anyway, I'm not so sure there is a great, suitable replacement back there. They've piecemealed it back there before, and they can probably get away with it with enough firepower up front.
But
always a but on these things,
and that one's a big old one. Yeah. Liverpool. It's going to be a tough go. Here for Liverpool. I do not expect now, especially, that you will see a repeat.
It's gonna take a massive dent out of that opportunity for them. And I think now more than ever, they had a ton of luck last year.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna need even more so now, because Van Dijk is a very calming presence in the back. I love the way that he plays center back. Oftentimes he'll take no more than two touches. He's very safe with the ball.
Sure.
He's very smart with the ball. He's very disciplined where he could make those runs or take those extra touches. He simply chooses not to, and he limits his mistakes.
Yeah.
Not everybody's is as disciplined.
There you go.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, looking at everybody around Liverpool right now and the competition that is now that they're facing with, it's not last year's league. Okay, there are teams that we were sitting there going, oh, they're pushovers last season. Here it is this season in Aston Villa, you know, and you've got clubs that have really stepped up their game with that. I don't want to call it like a formula that Liverpool had, but they sat there.
And, it's a kind of a formula, 4-3-3.
But they also played like a 4-3-3. They kept their lines very, and they just played very disciplined soccer. And with that being said, you've got these other clubs coming right in and saying, all right, we can do that too. And they are.
I mean, Aston Villa escaping by the skin of their teeth, have a match in hand, and can go to the top of the table at the weekend.
Saying.
Or maybe even before then.
It's just so weird.
Yeah. In fact, well, they can go to the top of the table on Friday. They play Leeds, which is not going to be a pushover by any stretch.
No, Leeds is good.
Yeah, Leeds is respectable. Manchester City, they're gonna have their slump buster match against a surprisingly not totally crappy West Ham.
I know.
West Ham is sitting ninth right now, 7 points.
Decent.
I think that's about as much as they had at Christmas last year.
Decent.
No, I mean, it's not that bad, but it's still, you know, them and Aston Villa were right on the cusp. But right now, Man City sitting 11th in the table. You've got Manchester United 15th. Bottom three, Burnley, Sheffield United, Fulham have not won a match. Well, neither has West Brom. West Brom has two draws and three losses, so they're out of the bottom three right now.
Oh, good for them.
There is a...
Jeez.
Yeah, there
but,
is...
But, you know, listen, the whole top of that table, outside of the bottom three, bottom four, we'll say even bottom five, are sitting there looking at it. This is a very contentious, almost, kind of table where anybody could be anybody in any given... Sunday.
It's like Royal Rumble. Anybody could be thrown over the top rope at this point.
Sure. Knocked in the head with a chair.
You've got Everton, Aston Villa, Liverpool, Leicester City, Arsenal, Wolves are your top six. And they're in there within 4 points of each other. I mean, Tottenham and Chelsea kind of linger back there as well. And Chelsea really just screwed up against Southampton. They should have won that match.
No. There were a lot of mental errors in Chelsea. But that seems to be Chelsea's MO. Is that mental error thing where they're sitting there going, oh, yeah, brain fart.
Yeah.
You know? So, Premier League is fun. Champions League should be interesting. Obviously, we're getting the full slate of matches, like we said earlier, today. And then this weekend, there's another set of Champions League matches. So, that's off to the races and running. And that should be very interesting of who gets what and where and how everybody looks, especially in this 2020-2021 season.
I guess we should take a look at the MLS standings for just a few moments. Over in the East, Toronto is on top. And looking at you're going to have four clubs that are going to get to have a playoff for the eighth seed. And right now you've got Red Bulls, Montreal, Nashville, Chicago are your 7 through 10 seeds that would be playing for that final spot. Just outside that in 11th and 12th are Atlanta and Inter.
Nashville's got to shore up their backs. That's Nashville's problem is their backs, their back line. If they shore that up, I think they'll be all right.
And Joe Willis is solid in goal.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Walker Zimmerman needs just maybe
it's
a little bit more
keeper,
help.
But he needs some support. So
Seattle and Portland, Sporting KC, top three. They're within a point of each other. Mm-hmm. And then over in the, I guess because of the lack of balance of the divisions, it's really just a straight eight into the playoffs there. Vancouver on goal difference on Real Salt Lake for that last spot. But you've got Minnesota, LAFC, Dallas, San Jose in the mix. And LAFC, by the way, picking up Mark Segbers on loan from Memphis 901 FC for the remainder of the season. And Tim Mulqueen talked about him, about being an MLS talent, that he was next level. So, hopefully he's going to get a few minutes and get an opportunity here in the waning part of the season.
Nashville playing Dallas today, I believe, this evening. And that should be an interesting match to see what East versus West could look like.
Because they played a two-game set right after the MLS is back tournament.
Right. Which,
because they both dropped out because of the Rona.
The Vovid. Yeah. The
what?
The Vovid.
Yeah. Yeah.
We vetoed it.
Yeah. And then I guess last bit of news is, as far as we know, no movement from Memphis 901 FC on naming a permanent head coach.
No.
I know Ben Pearman was on at the weekend on a Sunday night newscast as interim coach. He was in there for an interview, but still with the interim tag.
Yeah,
for now,
and we anticipate it any day now, any week now, but here very soon, right? I mean, you would think that the club might make a move sooner than later.
Maybe, and it depends if they stay with Ben, maybe so. If they don't, maybe they wait for all of the contracts to be expired in USL because the season still technically rolls on for a couple of more weeks, which means there are more players that are not playing right now, but some of those contracts, I think, maybe still...
Until December or so?
Valid, or till mid-November or something like that. I don't know exactly.
Well, you brought up the finals, so we need to talk the Final Four. from USL. Louisville saw that coming, right? And yep. Tampa Bay Rowdies saw that coming. That's going to be a grudge match. Should be really good. However, on the other side, you got Phoenix Rising taking on El Paso. Now, you ask us to play pick 'em. We did not pick this.
No, we had Louisville and Tampa as contenders, but I had St. Louis as a sentimental favorite out of the East. They lost 2-0 to Louisville, so they're done.
Which it's not surprising that it happened. You know, while we picked St. Louis, we were sitting there going, it would be nice, you know.
They had punched above their weight all season.
Right.
They beat Indy out for that last spot in their group. So that was a big shock. And then they picked up a playoff win. Then the luck pretty much ran out. Phoenix advancing after kicks from the mark against Reno. That ended up 5-4 after a 2-2 draw during the match itself. And then El Paso Locomotive getting past New Mexico United, 1-1 at the end of all the added time, and then 5-3 kicks from the mark for El Paso Locomotive. So El Paso, a dark horse in this. Phoenix,
sure,
we saw as a likely...
Right, that is probably your final out of the West, and then out of the East. I mean, Louisville?
It's at Louisville.
That's their plus, and that beautiful 19, whatever, however, million dollars stadium
it is. Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous, and the pit, it's a nice big pitch.
Yeah.
And it is nothing but a soccer pitch. So,
right.
If this were in Tampa, I would probably go. Tampa. I would lean toward Tampa.
Yeah, I think I would too. But because it's in Louisville, you might have a lot of those Tampa Bay Rowdies, whatever their supporters group is called, make the trip.
Maybe.
I mean, you're talking about a finals appearance, so it could stand. Now, the finals are in Louisville? With that stadium? Is it again in Louisville this year?
Maybe.
Because that would be a huge, you know, feather in the cap and tip to the cap to Louisville. Louisville at home is dangerous. We saw that.
Yes.
You know, Louisville's like, yeah, this is our house. Wipe your feet on the mat.
Yeah. Yeah, Louisville, that's a tough den to play in for sure. But the conference finals are this weekend. First one is Louisville and Tampa Bay at 6:30, and then at 9:30 Central, Phoenix Rising and El Paso.
I watched that game through my eyelids.
Yeah.
The 9:30 one, yeah.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
I'm really good at that.
It's a tough one in the time zone. That'll be rocking out on the West Coast. Coming up, we got some final thoughts, and I've also got one final question for Kyle Morton before he leaves St. Louis. That's coming up next on My Three Subs.
More next on My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
When you're buying or selling a home, it can be one of the most stressful times of your life. When you're purchasing a home, it's one of the biggest investments you'll ever make, and you want to get it right, and you want to know that you got it at a fair price and not have buyer's remorse as you're moving those boxes into the house. If you're selling, you want to make sure you get a good price for it, and you're able to move on quickly and move on to your next stop in life. I'm Tim Van Horn, licensed realtor in Tennessee and Mississippi with Cry Like Realtors. My number is 901-756-8900 in my office, or you can always call me on my cell at 901-262-5000. I'm relocation certified, and whether you're moving around the block or around the world, I can help you get where you're going. If you're thinking of selling your home, give me a call. I'll put together a marketing plan that'll help you put that sold sign in the front yard faster. If you're thinking of buying a home, give me a call or check me out online at timvanhorn.com for a personalized home search. And I never, I mean never, charge a fee to work with buyers. So give me a call at my office, 901-756-8900, or on my cell at 262-5000. You can always find me on the website at timvanhorn.com. That's timvanhorn.com. For Tim Van Horn, Cry Like Realtors.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. And we have added time to the podcast.
Yeah, all right, let's rock and roll here with a final question. And I called the match between Memphis 901 FC and St. Louis, and it was a 1-0 home win for 901 FC. I believe that's the match where Keanu scored. I think he had the one and only goal of the match, and then Memphis defended like crazy at the end and hung on for a victory. But there was an opportunity to go up 2-0 in that match, and there was a penalty,
a PK,
that was called, And Brandon Allen confidently stepped up to it. And calling the match, I'm looking on the screen, and I'm a good lip reader. So I know it was G-rated, but Kyle Morton was jawing something. He was saying something to the Brandalorian. He was saying something to Brandon Allen. I'm not sure what it was.
Hey, season two is going to be great.
I kind of, yeah, and it drops later. It drops in October, so don't forget.
Drops October 30.
I hope you take your mask off more.
Right,
you
know? Yeah.
But I'm just wondering what he said, because Brandon scuffed that. That was very much an un-Brandon-like penalty kick. I don't know if it was the turf.
He did not have the typical power.
Oomph. Yeah.
The oomph.
He can drill it left-footed. He did not drill this one left-footed, and it was a pretty easy fall down to the left and parry away save for
it
Kyle.
It was not quite in the corner. It was not quite in the middle. It was not up at all. And so what got into his head? What did he say to get into his head?
I thought he said something. The only words that I thought I could tell was, seen your videos.
Oh.
I'm not sure.
So fill in the blank. I know where you're going with this, buddy.
Kyle, help us out. You can DM us. Or maybe, you know what?
We know he listens.
It may be just if we can have a brief conversation or just, like I said, even just a direct message.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, because I'm sitting there and I'm trying not to laugh, because, you know, it's in the middle of a match and I'm thinking, okay, the odds are Brandon's going to score.
Sure.
But he, not only did he not score, it was a penalty kick unlike what he normally takes.
Right.
So I don't know if Kyle got into his head, and I just want to know what he said, because I would like to use that in my own journey as an amateur goalkeeper. So, Kyle,
how do you get into the head of a penalty kicker?
So, Kyle, while you're getting over the grief of the end of the season and the end of the St. Louis franchise, and waiting for probably one of multiple offers to come in,
and we
know that you've got bigger and better things waiting. Throw us a bone.
Yeah.
Let us know, what did you say to Brandon Allen?
Tell your mom the pizza was good. I don't.
No, see, show. Kyle would not say anything.
I know.
Kyle would not bring somebody's mother in that.
How do you get into the head of a penalty kicker? That would be my way. I'd be like,
I could have sworn I saw him mouth, "seen your videos." I could be wrong. But there's not much else. There's nothing that rhymes with that.
No. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. So
no harm, no foul, because Memphis won the match. So it's not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's no malice at this point. There's no malice. Anyway, if you want to shoot us a DM too, you can of course do that via Facebook and Twitter. We are at My3Subs Podcast. On Instagram, we are at My3Subs Soccer Pod. You can also shoot us an email if it's just too much for the DMs. Well, then you can slide right into our Gmail. We are at My3SubsPodcast@gmail.com. And if there's something you might have missed, well, of course, you can take a look at the websites. And I use that plural because we are at my3subspodcast.com and Tim Van Hornock.
That's right. You can listen directly from my website. And what's up, my nerds? You got to catch my homeboys on Geek Tank Radio, too, man.
Yeah.
It is a killer show. They tackle all things pop culture and so much more. Actually, they're the coolest kids on the block. Make sure you catch Geek Tank
nerds.
Radio.
Hey.
No, you're not. I've seen your videos.
No, yeah, that's true. Also, shout out to our great sponsors, Haunted Web of Horrors, and we've also got Podcave, and of course, Tim Van Horn.
So,
there you go.
Did I sponsor this? I guess I'll get a bill in the mail.
Yeah, you're going to bill. I'll send you an invoice.
There's the whistle. Thank you for listening. Check out more of My3Subs Podcast, A Soccer Odyssey.